is You Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Ready for the spontaneous, unrehearsed conference of four of America's top news reporters. Their questions do not necessarily reflect their point of view, but may be their way of getting a story for you. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest today is the chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission, Mr. John A. McCone. His agency is involved in the important negotiations now going on in Geneva on the major world problem of a treaty to outlaw the testing of nuclear weapons. Mr. McCone accompanied a committee of Congress to Geneva for a briefing. He also made a recent tour of the Atomic Energy Research's installations in Russia. After an exchange of visits by American and Soviet atomic officials, it was announced a few days ago that an agreement in principle has been reached on a cooperative program of research into the peaceful uses of atomic energy. Mr. McCone is a native of California, an engineer and businessman. He occupied several important positions under former President Truman, including the office of Undersecretary of the Air Force. He assumed his present duties in July of 1958. Mr. McCone is making his first appearance on a panel interview program. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Mr. McCone, are Martin Ogronsky of NBC News, William Hines of the Washington Evening Star, John Finney of the New York Times, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Mr. McCone, if you're ready, sir, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. McCone, in your judgment, are we taking any risks at all with the security of the United States by continuing our ban on nuclear testing?
Not at the moment, I don't think we are. If we continued our ban for a long time and other countries were not obligated to do so, we would take a risk with our security.
In December of 1957, President Eisenhower, in letters to the prime ministers of Japan and India, said that a halt on tests would be dangerous to the security of the United States and the free world. Can you tell us what happened to change that situation during this past year when we haven't been testing?
Well, there's been a great deal of development work done since that time. And I think we have reached a stage where if all countries agree to stop testing and such a suspension can be properly safeguarded through controls, then I think that it would be a safe step for us to take.
Mr. McCone, can you tell us what has happened to our military nuclear program since we stopped testing in October 58? Has it just been drifting, or have we been making progress in the development of small nuclear weapons?
We have been digesting the work that was done in 1958, and we've been carrying on a very aggressive development program, which could be carried on during the intervening period in the absence of tests.
Can we keep this ban without disintegrating our laboratories and our installations?
No, I think that if we keep this ban, it will have effect on our laboratories. I wouldn't say that they would be disintegrate, because we would reorient them so that they would work on in other areas, the peaceful uses. It would lessen the emphasis on military development.
What would happen to our small weapons program, though?
Our small weapons program would come to a stop.
Entirely.
Entirely, except for that which has already been developed. Yes, that's true.
And couldn't this be a serious business as long as the Russians have a much larger conventional force than we have?
Yes, I think that it could be a very serious business. It would be particularly serious under an arrangement whereby the Russians could conduct tests in a clandestine manner, and we could not because of the openness of our country. This would be very serious. As far as the other part of your question is concerned, the conventional forces, I think we have small weapons which are reasonably satisfactory, though they are expensive and are not perfect by any manner of means.
Mr. Finney.
Mr. McCone, to follow up Mr. Spivak's line of questioning, which at this point do you feel is more important? That we continue testing to develop new and better warheads, or that we reach an agreement to stop tests?
I think that we should genuinely attempt to reach an agreement to stop tests under conditions of proper control so that we could be sure and the world could be sure that all parties to the agreement abided by the agreement. Now, I think that that last point is extremely important and one from which we should not deviate.
Well, you've made clear that we're going to sacrifice something in the way of weapons development. Now, what are we going to gain from a test ban, in your opinion?
I think the two things. I think that as far as the atmospheric testing is concerned, it would relieve the concern about fallout. Right or wrong, there is a concern, and I think the world should be relieved of that concern. As far as the balance of it, the hope is that it would be a step towards disarmament. And this, I think, is a very important matter for us to deal with.
Mr. McCone, our present voluntary moratorium expires on December 31st. And we have to make a decision as to whether we are going to continue this suspension or resume testing. What is your own personal feeling? Should we resume testing on January 1, or should we continue our voluntary suspension?
Well, that depends upon the status of the negotiation. As you know, there will be a technical discussion. A group will convene within a very few days. And I would think that it would take them several weeks to consider all of the new technical data that's been developed. I think it would be only natural that we should give a little time for the negotiators to consider the findings of this technical group.
So
that may run past the end of the year, and under those circumstances, a short extension on a week-to-week basis would seem in order.
Just week-to-week? You wouldn't say another year's extension?
No, I would not.
Let's see.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. McCone, the other big scientific activity our government is engaged in, aside from atomic energy, is space, of course, and you are a member of the President's Space Council by law. In that connection and in that capacity, I would like to have you tell me what you think, in the overall field of space work, our position is comparable to the Russian.
Well, there's no question about the fact that the Russians are ahead of us in space. They're ahead of us because they have larger vehicles, larger propulsion units, and that permits them to put up bigger articles into orbit and to do such things as they have done in connection with the moon. Now, we have to take some extraordinary measures to catch up. It's my feeling this is going to be very difficult to do because the scientific advantage that they have gained sort of feeds on itself, and I expect that we're going to see some rather spectacular things done by the Soviets in the next year or two or three in space.
Well, now, Dr. William H. Pickering, the head of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, one of the five or six top space scientists in this country, said last week that the situation was serious enough that he thought the president should admit that we are in a race with the Soviet Union to point up to the American people just how serious this is. Do you agree with Dr. Pickering on this?
Not entirely, no. I think that, as I said last week, space is infinite. The resources of any nation and all nations are finite. I don't think this is properly defined as a race. What I think we should do is to clearly define our objectives in space from a standpoint of the benefits that are to come to science and to the people. And then we should pursue those objectives aggressively.
Well, precisely in that connection, there's been considerable discussion of the competition and duplication among the civilian and military space people and among the military space people themselves that some people say has slowed up our space effort. Do you think that a single agency built, let us say, along the lines of your own Atomic Energy Commission with civilian and military applications in it would help to solve this situation?
Yes, I would support that.
You would support
AEC-type
organization?
Well, whether
space.
It be just exactly an AEC-type organization or not, I'm not prepared to say, but I think that a civilian space agency to handle all phases of the space activities would be the correct thing to do.
Including military application.
Including military application, yes, I think so.
Mr. Ogronsky.
Mr. Chairman, in your inspection of Russian atomic installations and your conversations with the Russian nuclear scientists, did you find that there was any fundamental difference between the American and the Russian approach to scientific research and nuclear research?
Yes, I think that my principal observation was that the Soviets were organized so that they seemed to have the facility to select their particular objectives and then to marshal their resources, their scientific and technical resources, in such a way that they could accomplish that objective in a minimum of time. I think that they're better at that than we are.
Mr. Chairman, you run our atomic energy program. You're responsible for its policies. Do you think that they run theirs better than we do ours?
No, not necessarily, but I think that that their very form of organization permits them to do things perhaps more rapidly than we can.
Could you define that more specifically?
Yes, I'll give you a good example of it. We looked at a very large and impressive controlled thermonuclear machine called the OGRA. It was much larger than any machine that we have in this country for such purpose, although we are building a machine of equal or greater proportions at Princeton. This machine was designed and built by them in 10 months' time. And moreover, once the decision was made to go ahead with the machine, the whole process of securing the several million dollars that were required took exactly 1 week, if I'm to believe Professor Emelianov.
Do you think that, as far as the Russians are concerned, that money is no object? Did you get that feeling when they really want to do something?
No, not at all. I think it is a definite object. And I got the feeling that they're concerned about the cost of some of these things, most particularly in the atomic energy field, where costs are very great indeed.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. McClellan, has there been any trustworthy indication that the Soviet Union has not been conducting underground tests?
We do not know of any tests that they have conducted, nor do we have any monitoring devices which would disclose small tests up to 5 or 10 kilotons if they had chose to conduct them in a clandestine manner.
I'm inclined
to believe that they have not done so.
In other words, if they did conduct underground nuclear explosions, if they did hold some, it would be hard for us to detect.
I think it would be impossible.
We just couldn't be sure.
I think it would be impossible with the equipment we have now.
How then can we get a satisfactory inspection system, even if they agreed to it?
Well, by the installation of stations and the arrangements to permit sorties to go out to make on-site examinations, this is referred to as on-site inspections, a considerable amount of detection and identification can be done, particularly in larger underground explosions.
From what you know of the present state of negotiations at Geneva, Mr. McClellan, do you expect that an agreement to ban nuclear testing with effective inspection will result?
Well, I would hope that it would. I think, however, that the initial agreement is going to have to be in certain specified areas, because I don't think that technology is advanced to a point where all underground inspections can tests can be properly inspected and detected.
How serious do you think it would be if we came away from Geneva without an agreement?
Well, that's a very difficult problem to answer, Mr. Spivak. I think that it would be upsetting to the world. There are certain people that have placed a great deal of hope on this agreement. I can't just answer how upsetting it would be or how serious it would be.
By having this test ban now, isn't the Soviet Union getting exactly what she wants? A test ban without any inspection, and as long as she keep us talking, isn't she going to continue to get exactly what she wants?
That's exactly right, and that's why we should not continue this indefinitely.
Well, now, when you say indefinitely, what do you mean? Do you mean really a matter of weeks after December 31st?
I mean exactly that, sir.
In short, you would not stretch it out over months?
No, I would not. No, sir.
Mr. Finney.
To follow up this point again, Mr. McCone, has the administration decided that there shall be only an extension of a matter of weeks beyond January 1st?
Well, I assume that Secretary Herder's statement, which you're familiar with,
He gave those as his own personal views at his news conference a few weeks ago, or past week. But since then, has there been a firm decision that we will propose an extension of a matter of weeks?
No, not that I know of.
I see. Well, then, I wonder how you square this extension for just a few weeks with the United Nations resolution of yesterday, which called upon the nuclear powers not to resume tests again, particularly as long as the Geneva negotiations were in progress. Aren't we morally bound by this UN resolution?
Yes, so long as the negotiations are in progress, that's absolutely right, yes. But I think what will happen is that after this technical conference and a consideration of all of the issues and the problems that will be brought to the table, then it would become apparent that the just what the negotiators could agree upon. I don't think that there'll be a situation that they will have to go on indefinitely after that.
Oh, I see. You think the talks are going to reach a make-or-break stage fairly early next year. Is this your opinion?
Yes, I would think so. I would think that they would reach that point. After all, they've been going on since the 1st of November a year ago.
Mr. Hines.
I'd like to ask you a question that borders on the economic, I guess, having to do with atomic power plants. I've noticed in some of your publications that four atomic power plants are due to start up, generating electricity next year. The Fermi plant out in Michigan, the Yankee Atomic, Con Edison's plant in Elk River in Minnesota. Will any of these, which will produce a total, I think, of about 500,000 kilowatts. Will any of these produce power that will be economically competitive with power that is produced by other means?
No. No, none of those plants will be what you might say economic in terms of being competitive with the conventional plants in the same areas.
How long would it be, would you say, in the United States before we get competitive atomic power anywhere?
Well, the next generation of plants, of the very large plants, apparently will be reasonably competitive in the higher cost areas in the United States.
Well, that means the next generation of plants, not the next generation of people.
No, the next generation of plants. Plants which can be started now and would require 4 years to build and maybe a year to get into full operation will be competitive in the high cost areas.
Well, now what about hydrogen power, which is much farther off? There are some tests and experiments going on in this country for the peaceful harnessing of hydrogen power. Can you predict when any of these efforts might be successful?
No, this is referred to as controlled thermonuclear fusion. This is proving a very difficult undertaking, and I have heard no one predict who is willing to set a date as to when these unsolved problems can be resolved.
Mr. Ogronsky.
Mr. Chairman, a question that's always puzzled me is if we do have this inspection system set up successfully in Geneva, how can it operate successfully without the participation of China, without teams being able to operate in there?
Well, this is a very provocative question, and China, of course, is not the only country there are. Many land masses. The thought is, or the hope is, that with three countries coming together, the three nuclear powers coming together in an agreement, that the
that the other countries of the world will join, and those countries which have special influence on particular countries, such as the Soviet Union has with China, could work out suitable arrangements with them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, isn't there a very real concern that the special influence the Russians might have on Communist China might be used instead to get the Communist Chinese to carry on experiments that the Russians are forced not to carry on?
That's a possibility, yes.
Well, that's a pretty dangerous possibility.
That's a very dangerous possibility.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Chairman, why do the Soviet scientists do things so much faster than ours? Are they better than our scientists?
No, I don't think so, and I don't want to leave the impression that they do everything faster. They seem to be selective, and when they train their sights on a particular objective, they seem to be able to marshal their resources to do that particular job very fast.
I was impressed with what you said recently in a speech that you made, and I'd like to quote a sentence to you. We must adopt some of the same philosophies of our wartime practices if we are to win the contest for technological and economic supremacy in which we presently are engaging. On what projects, Mr. Chairman, would you adopt what wartime practices?
Well, I think that in a great many fields, we can adopt a philosophy of concentration and intense effort, just as we did during the war, for instance, in the development of the bomb itself. I think in the field of my own concern that we can advance some of our projects by narrowing down the area of our activity and concentrating and increasing the intensity on the more promising and more useful projects.
Could you, without revealing any secrets, tell us what you have in mind in your own area of work?
Well, as I think that it's been announced, we have made a very detailed study of all of the various nuclear power reactor programs and processes. And we've forecasted each one of them, just where they would take us from the standpoint of economical and competitive nuclear power and how much it costs to get us there. And now we are trying to decide just how many times we should go down this road.
Did you get any impression in Russia, Mr. McCone, that they're making any progress on atomic-powered aircraft?
I've talked to them about it. Of course, that's in a classified field, and therefore it was not a subject for discussion. However, I got the impression that they are working on it.
You think we should be doing more about it?
This is a very difficult problem with us. And I think that, and as you know, the nuclear-powered aircraft has traveled a rough road. I think that we should first make up our mind whether it is worth the effort, finally, and then if we decide to go forward, we should go forward with a very intense effort.
Mr. Spivak?
Mr. Chairman, one question. Will you look into the future for a moment, since you plan to concentrate, and tell us what atomic energy could mean to the world if it is used solely for peaceful purposes, if we really concentrated on peaceful activity?
Well, as you know, Mr. Spivak, there are many studies made of the future power requirements of the world, with our rising population and the fact that people use more and more power for in every one of life's activities. It's clear that the conventional fuels will not forever sustain the rising demand for power. And we must develop another power source. And that is why it is important for us to develop nuclear power.
Mr. Finney.
Mr. McCone, in recent months, we've had a great number of exchange of visits, in which yours was just the latest. I wonder, do you feel that these visits are, to any extent, solving the basic issues which are dividing the East and West?
No, I don't think they are. I don't think they are at all. I think they're providing a means for communication, but the
but the basic issues remain there. And there can't be, and these exchanges do not involve a relaxation of tension. Until we can answer some of the basic problems, and you're familiar with all of them, we can't have a relaxation of tension, nor can we let down our guard.
Mr. Hines.
Your Russian opposite number the other day, Mr. McCone, suggested that going one step further and having perhaps a Soviet-American cooperation on a super atom smasher, which would be big enough so only one would be needed in the whole world. Do you see any possibility in the foreseeable future of such a joint Soviet-American project for science?
Well, I think that it's something well worth studying as a joint Soviet-American project and a project in which maybe many other countries would engage. He's right in one regard, that a big atom smasher, to use his word, I think science needs only one of them.
Mr. Ogrodsky.
Mr. Chairman, did you find any interest in talking to the Russians in Moscow in developing a program for nuclear research in the area of medicine? Did they propose anything to you along those lines?
No, we did not discuss that because the group that we were talking to are not involved in biology and medicine as we are. That's carried on in a different ministry, and therefore we did not get into that at all.
Gentlemen, I think we're going to have to save the rest of our questions until Mr. McCone comes back, and we hope that'll be soon. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
And monotonous thanks to John A. McCone, chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission, and the members of the Meet the Press panel for a stimulating and enlightening half hour. The panel included Martin Ogrodsky of NBC News, Walter Hines of the Washington Evening Star, John Finney of the New York Times, and Lawrence E. Spivak of Meet the Press. And now, as usual at this point, a personal word, if you might call it that. Almost 70 million visits were made to our...